Hadi bakalım.
Gentlemen, I've been following this story closer than an Egyptian airplane following Erica Kirk around.
It's like 4 days behind.
Exactly. Trying to make catch up, you know? She's moving quick. Not easy.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we are on it tonight. And thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Human Reaction. I am one of your hosts, Joe Sheehan. I'm here with David Rand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett, the usual cast of characters. And today we are talking about the Charlie Kirk story again, this time with some new revelations. Right, David?
New revelations. There's a lot of the drama around the post-shooting investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some mainstream corporate press revelations. It's a strong word for the actual reporting that we're going to talk about. But it is, I think, it is a good frame to kind of see how the corporate press is dealing with this. And then you have the rise of Candace Owens going from a top 10 podcaster to the number one podcast in America today since Charlie Kirk's assassination.
That's right. And we would like to become the number one podcast as well. So Kyle might have some suggestions for the audience tonight.
Well, one way you can do that is by liking and commenting on all of our stuff. But also, especially the Spotify listeners, we see you in the comments. We asked you to call us gay and retarded, and we see that we are gay and retarded.
YouTube, not so much. I would have expected it more from YouTube if I'm
honest. Kind of retarded.
But Troy McGee, thank you for doing that for us, calling us gay and retarded. He also said we are the best, so thank you, Troy. We appreciate your comment.
So this time, comment something else. Maybe the opposite of gay and retarded? What's that?
Whatever you think the opposite of gay and retarded is, call us that this time in the comments.
I'm actually looking forward to what people come up with.
Yeah.
Or make it worse. I don't know. Just follow your heart.
It's just a choose your own adventure now. You decide which path you want to take us down.
That's right. Speaking of choosing your own adventure, Candace is doing just that right now, so let's get into the story.
The Washington Post has some new reporting where the WAPO journalists have called Robinson in jail and got a hold of him. Had about a couple conversations, I think like four, for 40 minutes total. And it's interesting because it kind of re-adjudicates everything we already know. The article's interesting because it really reads like we talked to him, he didn't say anything, but he didn't say things, so then we're kind of like reading into what he didn't react to. For example, they bring up Charlie Kirk getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom to him, and he had no comment. That's what the article says. And then it kind of re-adjudicates, and then it also brings up the Erica Kirk forgiving him, and he gives no response.
So did he give a response to anything?
No, that we're aware of. So what they said is like, he's like, I won't talk to you. And they said, well, we'll talk to you. And then they wrote an article about it.
WAPO went in and was like, we're going to talk to this guy.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk at him and report on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is what counts as reporting.
Exactly. That's great.
There is like a re-adjudication of a lot of other people around him and whether or not he was ideologically motivated, his whole story. That all gets brought all to the forefront. They do the Washington Post thing that you're not surprised about, where they muddy the waters about any ideological formation of him. Like they don't poo-poo it, but they do include the mother's comments about him kind of within the last year, all of a sudden becoming gay and having a boyfriend and then starting to get more on that side. They do include some texts I haven't seen before, specifically about... if you go down, Kyle, I mean, I'll actually read them out. It's a little longer, so you might want to go faster. Okay, so this is a good text I haven't seen before. It was to a friend. The friend says, I wish there was a simple solution against fake news, but there isn't. I have my own opinions, but that's it. Robinson says, pretty much see if there are any sources cited and check the accuracy. If really any of it's not true, then it's fake. Friend, I understand freedom of speech, and it's cool, but it makes it so media can lie about anything. Robinson, I wish shit like anti-vax wasn't protected under freedom of speech because it's speech that actively harms people. Now, if someone said that to you, I wish anti-vax wasn't subject to freedom of speech, would you guess that person was a liberal? Right? You guess they're pretty progressive.
I would, but I would also wonder why anyone would say that.
What do you mean?
Like, it's just the way it's said. It just sounds weird to me. Oh. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like an FBI agent.
Well,
like,
exactly.
Not to be conspiratorial, I'm just saying it sounds like someone at the center for at the CIC talking to Facebook, being like, "Well, you have to censor that because it hurts people, and it's not a violation of freedom of speech because anti-vax misinformation." No,
it sounds like a comms person trying to write texts that convey the idea that they want to convey through some means.
Hmm.
I don't know. I just don't buy it.
It's a weird vibe. It's probably a real text to the sense that, you know, relatively high editorial standards of Washington Post. They don't always do fake news. So it's probably correct. But that it's just strange that a lot of the discourse is still on, at least from the mainstream press. Was he ideologically motivated? Was he actually a liberal? Is he part of our camp?
Yeah.
Or is he some deranged Trump shooter?
If that's the frame here, I would definitely say that wanting anti-vax narratives to be, you know, censored is certainly a progressive leftist perspective.
Right. And it's that should be notable in the article.
I'd say
this was commonly associated with left-wingers at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely left-wing coded. Oh. And usually the media always does the little, you know, comma, blah, 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 comma.
Yeah.
The comma
everything.
Tyler quote. Robinson, who said anti-vaxxers should be censored.
Donald Trump, comma, who's known for his Nazi sentiment. Yeah.
All of that stuff, yes. Yeah, that's context. Mm. So another, and I want to remind people too, and mostly because this is the most substantial evidence that we have of Tyler Robinson being Charlie Kirk's shooter, is this article from the Washington Post. It's the next one up, Kyle.
They published a
Discord message. They said they were sent a Discord message from a person that shows Robinson confessing to the crime.
It's worth noting too, because the reason why we're talking about this is there is a lot of conspiracy around this on whether or not he is even the guy who may have pulled the trigger. Like that is what a lot of the conspiracy and independent investigating is looking into. If you haven't been following the case, you might not be aware that is kind of in question. Like the official story is that he did it, but a lot of people are questioning that narrative, whether or not that's true.
Yeah. So and to be clear, for everything else, we're going to talk about Candace and everything else, or in bringing up any other theories that you want, right? This is substantial evidence in that direction. Mm-hmm. Not just because it was sent to WAPO, because you could disbelieve WAPO, right? It's the Washington Post. They were big on Russiagate, for example. There's all kinds of reasons to be suspect. But it was confirmed by Discord, the company themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could still have the theory, right, that he wasn't the shooter, but you'd have to construct an argument something like, okay, the feds went to Washington Post or planted somebody to send this made-up Discord message, and then they went to Discord and said, we need your collaboration to confirm this message. If you don't, we'll do bad things to you. Right. Theoretically possible.
Yeah.
But no evidence of that. Washington Post gets that and confirms with the actual message sender that too. So you also have to go to that person, get that person to also confirm. So you're getting less and more and more tenuous. Him admitting on Discord to a friend that he did shoot this person is substantial.
He specifically said, I'm surrendering through a sheriff friend in a few moments. Mm-hmm. That's.
Have you guys seen Liar Liar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was me!
When I read the headline, that's just what popped into my brain.
Where did you find that so fast? Did you have that just waiting?
No, I've found it and got it set up.
Good man.
Well done, sir.
Good man.
All right, so we don't have a timestamp or the image, but once again, as confirmed by Discord and as confirmed by Washington Post actually reaching out to the guy and talking to the guy and confirming his identity, his relationship with Robinson, that is really the, okay, Tyler Robinson shot the guy. Now, Candace Owens has been on her tear of growing her podcast substantially, 300,000 live viewers.
Yeah, no, like most of her episodes are getting about 2 million on YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's just what we can publicly see. Obviously, your podcast's everywhere.
Yeah, almost 6 million total subscribers. I mean, she's blown up over this time. And with a
share the wealth.
The little bit different demographic, leaning more female than most conservative audiences than the YouTube audience in general. Interesting.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, women love a good sort of like whodunit murder mystery, true crime. I mean, that's known.
People have been noting that. And they've been kind of using that as a attack avenue, but it's also, that's just the content, right?
Yeah, that's what it
and
is.
She, I mean, also women typically like the other stuff she does. Like, what was that? The Blake Lively stuff.
Blake Lively.
She also just wrote a book on feminism.
Candace did.
Make them a sandwich is the name of it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You get that for your fiance?
Yeah. Yeah, I might do that.
We'll do it together. I'll get it for my wife. Wow. You get it for your fiance.
And then we'll report back on the podcast how the gift opening went. Oh, boy.
Merry Christmas present.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro.
Oh, oh that wouldn't be good, probably.
Well, it's also noteworthy on her is a lot of people are looking at it as she was a good friend of Charlie Kirk. Now, there's a lot of people suggesting that that's not the case anymore, but she seems like she's debunked that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are looking at it like, okay, this person that worked very closely with Charlie for many years and, you know, there's like video evidence of them being very close together is on the case. And I think a lot of people are very interested in that storyline.
Well, it's the same compelling stuff that goes all the way to like Glenn Beck, where you're just asking questions. You're saying, okay, this is the official narrative, and that's okay. We can accept that official narrative, but let's look at all the other circumstances around this, because when you're looking at investigations, especially investigations of very high profile, you will find lots of circumstances that just don't add up. Mm-hmm. When they don't add up enough, you invite the alternative explanations for what's happening. The trick is that we're not yet at the stage of alternative explanations, as we'll kind of dive into. We're really at the place where people are just finding interesting things that are around this and then pointing this out online. And then sometimes it obviously getting over their skis maybe, or maybe overhyping or all kinds of other valid criticisms. But what's happened so far is we have this, what happened this week, into last week, Erica Kirk does this big media blitz. So the context is that Turning Point USA on their podcast puts out this big Candace thing saying, Candace is getting everything wrong. We'll have her on the show and we'll sort it all out. And then they never actually connect. And then, you know, Erica Kirk goes on this media tour where she's asked by Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss of Assad fame, of Assad toady fame, who is now, who went on to found the Free Press.
Well, now she's
working for CNN, right?
CBS.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't there a big buyout or something? What is this?
Ellison? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ellison.
Oh, Larry. And now
she's taking over like the head director role of everything, isn't she, or something along those lines? I haven't been following it too closely.
Yeah, she's taking a major role.
Pretty high up. Yeah.
Like major editor to the content, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought she was higher than that.
She's like very high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's running CBS News now and is saying.
She looks very high.
Editor in chief. So, yeah, Kyle, you were pretty.
Editor in chief.
Yeah,
there you go. So, yeah, and so she was asked Erica Kirk what she thought about what the content that Candace has been making.
Pastor Candace Owens, okay, at one time a friend of Charlie's, okay, at one time an employee of Turning Point, she has been one of the main peddlers of these conspiracies, and she is making a huge amount of money on it. She is building her business off of these lies. What do you want to say to her and the other people that are putting these lies out into the world right now? Stop.
Ooh.
That's it. That's all I have to say. Stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, very succinct.
Podcaster Candace Owens. Like, break that down real quick. That question is really interesting. Podcaster Candace Owens. You don't need to say podcaster. You just say Candace Owens. Everyone knows who Candace Owens is. Like,
well, right. I mean, it's clearly meant to frame her in a diminishing light. Right?
I was going to say, people who are watching CBS probably might not know who she is.
Can you exist in the media sphere right now and not know who Candace Owens is?
But I just think about who's watching CBS. I think it's older people.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. She's maybe one of the most famous names, and I don't know, maybe could be.
Yeah. And then the next part is like, and making lots of money doing it. It's
Barry,
interesting.
Barry, who just got that massive contract. Who just got way too much money for her job.
TP USA, who just got a ton of money once he died.
Didn't they
get $100 million?
Right. Right, which is sympathy donations, and it's understandable.
Absolutely.
Larry Ellison, who spent $8 billion through Skydance Media to acquire Paramount Global, which includes CBS, MTV, Nickelodeon, and other properties, who then, actually in backing of his son, David Ellison, puts her in charge. Coincidentally, all surrounded a very particular support of a very particular country that we can't say on YouTube, but it rhymes with Schmishmeryl.
I think we should just call it Isn't Real.
It's a lot of shekels, you know, yeah. It's a joke, guys. It's a joke. I'm just a joke.
You got some real chutzpah, you know.
Yeah, right, right. Also, Larry Ellison
of TikTok. I don't know if
TikTok.
Those jokes were kosher for YouTube.
Also, Larry Ellison of TikTok fame, who acquired TikTok recently. And
yeah, we've seen Paramount also trying to beat Netflix in acquisition of Warner Brothers right now?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've heard about
that. I think they backed out.
Netflix Paramount. Did or Paramount?
Paramount.
Mm. Okay.
And I think Netflix is doing the bid. I don't think it's going to go through. Mm. That's a whole different topic. But
really, I mean, I think it illustrates a broad point that Larry Ellison seems to be at the tip of the spear of this very large media push to get control over a lot of outlets, both social media, you know, alternative media, and also CBS. I mean, it's kind of a... It seems like a big land grab.
Yeah.
Similar to like the Jeff Bezos move, you know, jumping in for the Washington Post. And mm-hmm. you know, obviously he's got Amazon Prime. So, I mean, it seems there's this like tech takeover of media at the moment.
Mm-hmm. They're all failing companies at this point. Like they're falling apart. So it makes sense for somebody to come in and try to buy them out when their perceived value is low, right?
That makes sense. Right. Sure.
Well, and Larry Ellison has a particular ideological agenda as well. Keep in mind, remember that purchasing a TikTok was motivated a lot by censoring around the issue of Israel.
Yeah, anyone buying media obviously has an ideological agenda.
Yeah,
and you're then trying to push your agenda.
And yeah. then your evidence for that, he's the largest private donor to the IDF.
Larry Ellison is?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So,
why does a military have private donors?
We talked about this before.
Raise extra money, man. Yeah.
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 It's a common,
it's like a
common,
bake sale, yeah. but you raise like $1 billion on the cupcakes. Yeah.
Why do they need?
It's like a bake sale.
It's a common thing for smaller militaries to have kind of big donors, but Israel's one of those like very prominent ones that's very transnational and who supports
them. Saying, we don't give them enough.
Yeah, nope. They get, apparently not.
They got okay. Yep.
Got to anyway. Do a bake sale, just like we give the local school districts plenty of money, but they got to do a bake sale.
They got to buy some new textbooks and AR-15s.
All right, so. And to connect the dots, bring it back around, he then hires Barry Weiss, who is a ardent Israel supporter. And I don't think she would shy away from that at all.
No.
And put her in charge of this editorial role. Now, she does have like an ear of a very specific class of people in journalism and trying to make it less woke and all that kind of stuff. She had like a moment there with that when she was on the Joe Rogan Experience, stuff like that. So there's like a business sense to it, but she's also played a very staunch Israel role. So that's all the context. Candace went on Piers Morgan yesterday and had this conversation where he asked her about this conversation with Erica Turk, and she puts a very interesting spin on it.
When you saw Erica, she was obviously angry about you in that CBS town hall. What was her demeanor like when you met her?
Well, I don't think that she thought she was angry in that. I think maybe that was the characterization from the public. I certainly thought she was angry as well. And she sort of clarified that she was a bit annoyed by the questioning, the way in which Barry had set up the question with the podcaster Candace Owens, which I think was definitely being driven more by Barry Weiss's feelings towards me, long running feelings towards me, than it was perhaps for the benefit of CBS and trying to pretend to be an impartial journalist. So I think she was frustrated by the line of questioning is what she explained to me.
So how?
Okay, so just to clarify this, it's Candace's perspective that Erica Kirk was annoyed and perhaps telling Barry Weiss to stop at the way she was characterizing Candace?
No, I think that's an interesting interpretation. I don't know if that really holds. So, and I don't know if I queued this up well enough. Erica Kirk and Candace had a private meeting, and he's asking Monday, about this second this meeting after that. That happened after this.
Yeah, he's asking about her demeanor when they met in person.
Yeah, but you're right. In that private meeting, Erica kind of made like Candace to believe that it was more about Barry Weiss's question, which is interesting.
Hmm.
There's some added context too that in Candace's investigation, she said that the only way she's going to stop doing this investigation is specifically if Erica or her husband told her to stop doing the investigation. That's what Candace herself said on the only thing that would make her stop.
Right, right. So, I recall that.
Yeah, and that's actually been my one criticism, because when that did happen, she rephrased it to be like, well, she told me to stop lying. So when I, like, what am I lying about? And like, I thought that was a little sleazy way of getting out of being told to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the other side of it, to the degree that Erica Kirk is saying this, it's an interesting question, right? Is she in a position where she should stop if she's actually coming across real information that's valuable to the public? Right. And then she's like, well, maybe I made the wrong bet. And I think the high integrity thing to do at that point is to come out and say, like, look, I said I would do it. She said this. But at this point, I found out so much and I'm so concerned. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. Well, you know? I would appreciate that more as a fan of hers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she should, but she did say that. Mm-hmm. So
I did listen to the Monday episode after the interview with after the sit down with Erica, and Candace said that both came away having learned a lot from each other mm-hmm. about what they do know about the subject. So I'll be curious to see where that winds up going in the future.
Erica Kirk learned things
from Candace, and Candace learned things from Erica.
I do think Candace still has some things up her sleeve that she has not shared.
Oh yeah, 100% she does. Yeah.
Yeah. That's... So maybe, I mean, in this interview with Pierce, she did say that she told Erica two specific employees that she thinks Erica should watch out for.
Mm. Yeah, we're about to get into that part. One of the things I want to note back to the Barry Weiss thing is the phrase, I think this would be particularly hurtful to Candace, maybe to Erica if she was paying attention to it, is at one time.
Friend at one time to Charlie Kirk,
which could be interpreted two ways. It's a very slippery sort of thing, meaning like when he was alive at one time, or meaning they weren't friends towards the end,
right?
Which that's kind of how that's been a media push.
Yes, exactly. Which is I interpreted it the latter way, right? You could be charitable, interpret it the other way. Ultimately, I think it's kind of part of the subtle campaign to try to keep, like, try to separate Candace from Charlie Kirk fans.
Mm, interesting.
Well, there's been a media push too to say that they've had a falling out, and there's been a lot of text messages dropped that suggest that's not true, that they've been in communication. I have a hard time believing that they had a real falling out. It just doesn't seem like the way Charlie would operate as a coalition builder and everything. And also when I met Candace, it was Charlie Kirk that introduced me to her. And I could tell that they were very close. Like, it was extremely friendly relationship that they had. It wasn't just like coworkers. It was like deep friends. So I would have a hard time believing that there was ever that falling out there.
It'd have to be pretty severe, you'd think.
Yeah. Like, there'd have to have been something crazy that happened behind the scenes or something for that to be the case. But I just wouldn't see that.
Yeah.
So and they're actually playing both sides. So one faction, like the Barry Weiss faction, saying you weren't actually friends towards the end. And then there's the other faction, which is Tim Pool, who basically suggested that Candace has lost her mind because she was actually secretly in love with Charlie Kirk.
Oh god.
Speaking of people who have lost their mind.
Tim also had like a crazy meltdown where he was saying that Candace uses the same security as Charlie, so she's being hypocritical, and it turns out that's not even true. It was very strange.
Two episodes before that, he said she has no security, like one fat guy in the like a wall. So like he contradicted himself within a week.
Oh. Yeah, there's been some weird. Yeah, he's kind of
losing his shit.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe he loved Charlie.
He did. Yes.
From a distance.
Yeah.
I just want to. Well, not to make this about Tim Pool, but he has had a lot of security issues, apparently, over a lot of swattings, people shooting at his house, stuff like that.
Well, and apparently that's even in question.
Yeah, but the guy that did that, there was a viral clip that was saying of a guy calling up the sheriff's department. It was the wrong sheriff's department.
Oh,
and then somebody else called up the correct sheriff's department, and there was a reported case.
Okay, so, all right,
yeah. Well, so misinformation there. Mm-hmm. So let's continue, but we got a little bit more on this particular topic.
Would you categorize the 4.5 hours if you were looking at it in totality? What was the tone of the conversation? What do you think you both got out of it?
Well, for me, answers to the questions of trying to understand why there were so many turning point lies, and why instead of people acknowledging that these are lies, I felt that there was this $1 billion psychological operation to convince people that Candace is just crazy. These are lies. These are made up. And so I was very refreshed that they owned up to the lies. That was a great first step. And I think you know, what motivates that? Maybe because despite having what I would assume to be the best PR agents and crisis PR agents in the world, we're moving toward a different world where people don't really care, you know, if you are friends with the people at, WME and CAA and what they can do for you. That sort of power is ineffectual in this day and age. And so I think they recognize that, and that the public simply doesn't believe the story that they've been fed, and the psychological operation to convince us not to believe our own eyes or to trust our common sense instincts has failed.
Yeah, so it's an interesting moment, right? Because there's the people who are like, well, I want hard evidence. And you have Candace Owens saying, like, but there's so much before us that seems like it's taboo to talk about. And that's kind of why I think she's getting the audience she is, right? Beyond the, you know, the demographic question and like all those kind of things, is if there's only one person continuing to ask questions about a very important topic that happened, people want to see what's going on with that. You know, like, is this going to lead someplace?
Is it just a pure curiosity, you know, wanting to peer into this mystery or read something into it? Sort of that people are attracted to in that sense, do you think? Or do you think people really are kind of with Candace saying, I think there's more to this story and I want to get to the bottom of it?
I think the people have been kind of coming along throughout this process, and there's a ton of content. So it's difficult to actually parse everything out. Hopefully towards the end of this episode, we'll try to get like a true parsing out of the best claims that she's been able to put forward. Those folks, I think, are radically into the camp that there's something more here, like yeah. Candace, like she's persuaded them, or they were already there and they're looking for someone to champion that perspective. And after all this time of the federal government mucking up investigations, Oklahoma City bomber, and there's a lot of still questions still remaining about that. You can see some real great stuff out there about Oklahoma City, to 9/11 to JFK. Right. Each one of these all touch on things where the government either screwed up an investigation or appears to cover it up, that people, when a major figure dies, start looking for, OK, who's actually looking this for real? Mm-hmm. Right. Because I was convinced about this other thing that happened. That was a tragedy. And it seemed like the government used that to grow its powers. And maybe they're trying to do it again.
Well, and we got evidence so far after the fact in some of those cases of JFK or MLK. That did substantiate the conspiracy theory at the time, right?
50 years after the fact.
50 years after the fact, that it was too late to ever do anything about it or hold anybody accountable or get any real change from it. So people are sticking to this, trying to hopefully create some actual change in the moment while it's still possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're also just dealing with if MLK or JFK were assassinated when we had the internet and social media and independent podcasting and things like that. We're dealing in that world now, because this is probably what that world would have looked like
for sure
when MLK was shot. Because Charlie Kirk is kind of an MLK like figure, coalition builder, you know, kind of movement.
Not if you ask the left, but yeah,
same archetype,
sure,
you could say, right? So, who has a large swath of followers and, you know, has a large amount of influence, has the ear of the president, and so on and so forth. But there wasn't independent media that existed at the time, right, during that, to be able to do. And with independent media, you're going to be getting a lot of slop and you're going to be getting a lot of kind of bad rabbit trails that people go down. But then you're also going to get a lot of things that, if there is a cover up, if there's larger involvement, if there's intelligence services, organized crime, et cetera, all these things in it, you're going to be able to get deeper dives into that than you would for a controlled media apparatus.
Well, right. And I would also say that you have to follow those dead end rabbit trails, yeah, too, to see if they go anywhere. Yeah. But you then have to be able to be honest
and if pull
they
back. Don't
and come back and say, okay, that one didn't lead anywhere, but we're going to go this way now.
And that's the unfortunate nature of kind of the crowdsourcing of information, is a lot of people get very married to a certain rabbit trail that might not be fruitful in the end, and they get very stuck in on those things oftentimes, and they often don't have the wisdom to be able to make that pullback.
Sure.
Sometimes,
yeah, or yeah,
or recognize separation. When their favorite influencer is being experimental in their thoughts, you know, versus
right
a full endorsement of an idea or right. something.
Which is why the more common journalistic practice is to not come out with anything until you have a coherent theory,
right,
but that's not what Candace is doing, and that's not how new media is really done.
Yeah.
It could be just a downside of new media. Or it could just be the reality of trying to drive a process with the feds by revealing information as you go, because then you have pressure on them to actually have all their ducks in a row. and actually answer these questions.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have, and in the question of did Tyler Robinson do it, they do get to a summary kind of point, gives her the opportunity to try to put together her thoughts about Tyler Robinson as the lead suspect.
Confident that he was involved in some capacity on that day. As I have said many times on my show, I was the one who broke the story that he was at the Dairy Queen throwing out clothes, a local Dairy Queen throwing out clothes in a nearby cemetery. And so I do think he was involved and multiple people were involved that day. And I think he did pick up clothes. I had communication with Lance's family. I had communication with Tyler Robinson's family. And for some reason, Lance is being protected, which I find to be very strange. His own family thinks he's guilty of more. And they find it weird that the feds kind of glossed over him almost as though he was a Fed operative, like he was working on behalf of them. And you know, we've caught the feds have lied a lot. It's just a fact. Turning Point USA people have lied a lot. That is a fact, which they have agreed to. They said that these were mistakes, but they, you know, whether a mistake or not, the public was lied to. So I this obviously, you know, matters deeply to me. And it's just absurd that people would think that I'm doing this for clicks. I know Charlie. I knew Charlie. Charlie and I were very close. And it has been one of the most disgusting things ever that people first and foremost tried to start this psychological operation that Charlie and I hadn't spoken since 2019. They've lied about virtually everything that I've said on my podcast. I'm not going to let this go. Okay. I can't, we don't live in a country that is the embodiment of democratic principles. If Charlie Kirk gets publicly executed and the media apparatus is doing everything they can to cover the tracks, I would say to cover the tracks by demanding that there is no further inquiry into what happened on that day.
I think that was the longest he let her go on for during that entire episode.
Tried to select the least interrupted.
Because there was a lot of it.
It was painful to listen to.
As usual for Pierce.
By the way, before we go on, can I just say the Nick Fuentes thing about how he looks like the bird lady from, what is it, Home Alone 2?
It's actually 1,000%
I can't unsee it now. I just can't unsee it now.
Have you guys, maybe this is too much drama, have you guys seen all the stuff with his wife online?
Pierce?
Oh, yeah.
It's been weird. It just keeps popping up on my feed. I don't know what humiliation ritual he's going through right now, but it feels very off.
I have not.
Well, he accused Fuentes of being an incel, and so the Groypers got a hold of
his wife's Instagram page.
And media stories about her. She's like very public figure. It's
a lot of interest from handsome men, let's just say that. Anyways, moving back to the topic at hand, not Pierce's personal life.
Yeah, so I think it's important. My understanding of Candace's current position is that Tyler Robinson was involved, and how it all went down, was he a patsy or not, is the question, right? And was there a larger support network around him to encourage him, to cover for it, to make sure it happened the right way? It's hard to say. If you're doing an intelligence operation and you wanted to have a patsy, he would be an ideal kind of candidate for exactly that role, especially if he was a purposeful fall guy. When you look at the Washington Post article, his refusal to talk to the press, talking to the press could be a good defensive strategy for creating sympathy amongst a jury. If you're the lawyer, you know, maybe you would recommend him to do that. Or if you're Patsy, you'd say, I'm definitely not talking to the press, right? It's hard to say. It's hard to say exactly where it's going to lead or what it means. But it definitely, I've seen a lot of people who are basically accusing Candace of saying that he wasn't involved, or she confident that he wasn't the person who shot him. That doesn't seem right. I mean, what it seems like to be is that her case is that she's asking larger questions about other connections that could be available, things that don't make sense, and pointing those out, and then staying open to what the actual possibilities are. And I don't understand why that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, we talked about a little bit before we started recording how Candace gets her information, mm-hmm. and how a lot of it is these anonymous tips that come into this tip line that she has. And I guess, to what degree are you two concerned that the leads that she's getting are misinformation from the get-go to kind of lead her astray from the actual truth here?
I think that's the case with a lot of independent media. Is a lot of independent media, they all have their sources and things like that. And I think oftentimes a lot of people who may have used to been really good, they now trust some of their sources too much. And those sources are often purposefully providing disinformation to them oftentimes. And for her kind of crowdsourcing tip line. They filter through it, obviously. Like she's getting how many millions of views on an episode? She's probably having an inbox full, sure. And they're probably having to source through it. But there's things that are going to be coming of interest, and they're like, let's follow that lead. Let's follow that lead. And there's probably a lot of things in there that are those probably manufactured rabbit holes.
She has also talked about that several times on her stuff. Like she does think that she is given false information a lot of the times, but she does say they do their best to try to verify what they're being told.
Of course.
Well, right. So, an example of that too would be like yesterday Trump gave that speech, and it was leaked to all these people that he was going to be declaring war on Venezuela at the speech, and it just turned out he was giving a speech on affordability. Yeah. But right. Like it's one of those things where this is a tactic that happens on just common media practice.
Intentional misdirect. Yeah.
It could be intentional or it could be non-intentional. One of the things about reporting journalistic ethics is you typically can't go on single source because someone could lie. So you have to have a confirming practice that's usually held within your editorial team to make sure that everything you're saying is true. The challenge being is that she's a relatively small team, and to what degree is she holding to a firm journalistic practice in confirming things? There are points where she does very clearly say, hey, I talked to two people who confirmed this. That wouldn't be any different than any other reporter saying, I confirmed this with multiple anonymous sources who are protected because of reasons, right? This is a common journalistic practice.
Yeah. I mean, I would say even more common journalistic practice these days, at least within the legacy press, is the single anonymous source that we kind of make fun of, right?
Yeah. And so anytime people are pointing out that Candace Owens might have, and this is the strongest area of attack, right? Like, and I don't really have any challenge to it, right? I mean, if her journalistic practices aren't solid and some of these don't turn out because she trusted a single source, that's a fair criticism. But if she is confirming it and just not being good at disclosing it, that would be a different question. But a lot of news sources also disclose this stuff and they're terrible, right?
Right.
Of just single source anonymous people talking into the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or any of these major publications.
Right.
Yeah. So, and then, I think the next part has a fair summary of continued thoughts on this point that I think brings up some more valuable information.
Not a country that I can get behind.
Let's get to some of the details, because it seems to me you've put up a lot of theories, but a lot of them don't seem to have a clear conclusion from you about what you actually think happened. I mean, you've been all over this now ever since Charlie was killed. What do you believe happened to him? Who do you think killed him?
So I can't tell you definitively who pulled the trigger. I'm not going to lie to audiences and just put something out there that's not real. But what I can say is I feel convinced that the feds were involved. I can tell you that. I think the feds were involved in staging a cover-up. I think Kash Patel knows what happened and did not happen on that day. I am convinced by me being told by people that are feds that he is not acting right and that he is not wanting to share any information. Just a couple of people are allowed to even see anything. A fed told me that they can't even touch the Charlie Kirk file without risk of being fired, and that he's grown increasingly mad. The U.S. Marshals that were there when they were doing the quote unquote manhunt for 33 hours said that Kash Patel effectively sent them on a wild goose chase, which is what was signaled to the public when he said, we got him. And it was actually the wrong person. And so it caused people to stop looking because they were convinced they had the shooter. They felt that that was in order to allow the real perpetrators of the crimes to get away. But that could just be
the fog of the immediacy of these things.
So I think this is it's very similar to the conversation with Nick Fuentes, right? Where Nick Fuentes is like memeing with Piers Morgan and like being edgy to be provocative. And he's just like, I can't believe you would do. And don't get me wrong. I have no, you can have an opinion about the guy's aesthetic preferences or whatever, or his opinions. But like the fainting couch, like, oh God, you said that.
How could you?
Is such like an old media way of looking at how to think about these kind of conversations, right? It just feels like a boomer talking to a young person. This is similar to that in the sense of he's asking, well, how does it all come together into a single unified theory? And she's like, I don't have that. And he won't, the
it's
whole entire
purpose
interview,
of investigating.
He won't allow her to just say where things are at and the things that she's found. He has to have a grand theory right. of where it all ties together, and she doesn't have that.
Well, that's an unfair standard for to apply that to her when if you were talking to Kash Patel and Kash Patel said, well, it's an ongoing investigation and we can't share, you know, whatever. She's just doing it slightly differently and sharing what she knows that she can reasonably support mm-hmm. as the investigation goes on, whereas a federal source might just not share anything.
Right. And that's just that that open source investigation technique versus like the more traditional media, you know, story, which would yeah. which would include something more like, okay, I have some material evidence that doesn't add up, but I need a motive. You know, I need a motive for an alternative for the, for this to make sense, and I don't have that, so I'm not going to publish anything until I do.
Right.
And that would be a more traditional journalistic expectation that she's not following, and then he can't accept that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And that's really where the conflict is at with this whole thing. What she should do, I'm not going to tell her because it's her freaking platform. You know, I'm not the police of the internet. Right? I think that's a totally fair point.
Yeah.
And you know, from a journalistic like. Our media environment thing, is this a positive? I think that's an interesting question,
right?
Would we be better off if in general new media developed more higher standardized practice of restraining from bringing out theories until you've double confirmed every source and have a unified theory? Would that be a better place?
It's a good question.
I think there's pros and cons to both. There's probably a middle ground that exists there. I think that's the going back to why people are so kind of obsessed with the Candace investigations on this, as well as like even the Brigitte Macron stuff. I think there's a lot of people that are looking at it and they feel like they're participating in this crowdsourcing of information. It's like a crowdsourced investigation where old media is just like, oh, you're getting it told from you on high. This is what we discovered, right? And there's a participatory aspect to it.
For sure. I think that's very well said, Kyle. It is the difference between just going and sitting and seeing a movie and having a choose your own adventure book in front of you, right? Or something like that. You're actually engaged in the process that feels a different way. And I think it also bridges into this balance between entertainment and investigation. She's doing both, right? The investigation is the entertainment. It's live and in front of you every day. There's new information coming to light every day, and you get to sort through it in real time with her in a way. So there is sort of this parasocial element that exists that makes people very, very interested in
it.
And you're probably going to get a lot of slop because it is crowdsourced.
By nature. Yeah.
By nature, that's going to happen. Yeah. Anything like decentralized anything, there's going to be a lot of slop that just happens to exist within all of that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be willing to accept that if you're going to say independent investigative journalism and podcasting is a good thing and should be here.
Mm-hmm. The other part is like her point about the feds, right? I mean, if people within the FBI are contacting her to tell her that this has not been handled well and people can't access the file for political reasons, maybe for control of information,
lawsuits and stuff like that too, that are as another reason why some people are being very quiet.
Yeah, right.
But she's not involved in lawsuits and regarding this, so she's just kind of firing on all cylinders.
Right. But to the degree that if there are people within the FBI whistleblowing to her, how would that be any different than any other reporter who got a whistleblower saying, hey, this is an ongoing investigation, but it's locked down and no one can get to it. As long as that can be confirmed by more than one person within the FBI at a high journalistic standard, why couldn't she talk that and bring that out and say, this is a good reason to suspect that something fishy is afloat?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and as someone who generally has distrust of government institutions and of the intelligence apparatus in this country and in frankly all countries, I support it. Mm-hmm. Mess and all, I think it's a better thing that she's able to broadcast and put this stuff out there, have some of it disproven, follow the rabbit trails that go further, have sources come to her with information so that we can check the systems of power that we have just been subject to prior to this point in history. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't the Walter Cronkite era anymore, and I'm glad for that because I don't want to just be lied to and accept the mainstream slop. I'd rather actually accept the independent slop and have a chance of filtering through what I think is true and not, and think for myself.
That's the hard part, is the filtering mechanism, because a lot of people, it's like we were saying with people going down bad rabbit holes and they get too married to those rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. That's the one area where it's just be aware that's likely going to be a possibility, and everyone's likely going to follow down their own rabbit holes and on those things and kind of just get way too absorbed into a very particular thing.
Right.
What that is also slop, like,
for sure.
And that's the unfortunate con that exists with the independent, more decentralized crowdsourcing.
And you just have to hold people to a higher standard to not overly identify themselves with their ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, cause I'm focusing on the cons, but there's great pros that I think that you laid out there is that the pros, I think, oftentimes outweigh the cons of that.
Well, and it's just harder to control. Like when you're talking about the Walter Cronkite era and these other eras, that's when we had Project Mockingbird.
Right.
That's when we had easy points of singular failure that made it much more easy for the government to shape narratives. The challenge of the internet is it makes it a little harder. They still do. We know this. We have the Global Engagement Center, but it's not as easy. And you can have much less capture of a system, so maybe a higher likelihood of finding truth.
Well, and to bring the Mockingbird side to this, probably the new evolved intelligence scheme that is not domestic and foreign for both is bot campaigns to emphasize certain things on social media algorithms to pop up certain particular people that are saying particular things at a given time. You know, paid influencer, surrogate campaigns, mm-hmm. all those types of things are now the things to have to worry about because as the corporate press is descending, it's no longer just, we're just going to put a CIA guy in CNN. It's going to be here. We got to have an infiltration and influence campaign on the influencers.
Right. That's been very clear. Mm-hmm. That's a overt operation happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and last up, the most controversial one is Egyptian planes, Israeli government involvement, all that kind of stuff on the next bit.
You've so far intimated or inferred something weird involving Egyptian planes. So, mm-hmm. well, you know, what's that about? You've inferred perhaps Israeli involvement in some way. You've certainly mm-hmm. inferred a lot of Turning Point USA involvement. That's a lot of people getting involved here in the murder of Charlie yeah. Kirk, potentially. But what I'm really curious about is, given you've been all over all this and you've been airing all these theories, well, which one is it? It can't be all of these things. Is it somebody?
Well, of course.
Is it someone at Turning Point USA? And, I mean, who do you actually believe was behind this?
Of course, it can be all of those things. And what's really ironic here is that there's a clip of Charlie in the last months leading up to his death where he speaks about the JFK assassination. And he says that multiple countries were involved, multiple people were involved, the LBJ was involved, the feds were involved. And he's correct. That is what it means. When there is a conspiracy, there are multiple people that are involved. Of course, there's not one person on a grassy knoll who shot JFK.
Well,
why aren't you just going to point to one person? That to me, even that seems like a part of telling people not to believe their own gut. Obviously, for this to have been pulled off, there had to have been multiple people involved. There had to have been people at Turning Point that were complicit in having this happen. Now, who knows what their motivations are? Doesn't mean maybe this person's like, hey, I'm going to help you.
Hang on. Okay, let me stop you. Hang on. When you say obviously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is interesting how this tracks with the JFK assassination, where she brings it up, because I do feel like, as much as MLK, the investigation pattern matches really interestingly to me, right? Because you have unclear motive. Like there's a tenable motive, right? We discussed it earlier with the WAPO thing. Political motive, but it's not like a personal motive. It's not like he knew Charlie Kirk and was like getting, you know, whatever. But the motive itself is there, and so did the original shooter for JFK, like the typically explained shooter.
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah. Oswald had a particular motive, but it once again not super clear once you dig into his actual background and history. Young leader, JFK was a young president. Ballistics are strange, possible, but strange, right? The magic bullet theory of the bookstore, she says it wrong. It's not the grassy knoll, it's actually the alternative explanation. It's actually the bookstore shoots from behind, and then the way the body moves, all that stuff in the Zapruder film does suggest something strange, especially when it goes through the governor sitting in front of him and how the bullet changes and moves. Very strange, but possible, because bullets tumble. And they do weird things when they start tumbling, especially when they go through a body. But there are good questions about other things around that might be better explained through a second shooter. Autopsy questions are substantial. And what happens once he gets to the hospital? They both have substantial questions on there. Material questions about once the Zapruder film comes up and how the body moves becomes a very big material question. And then we get to see it happen, right? That's another similarity, and becomes like this cultural meme around it, where the explanation simply just feels weird because you watch it happen and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And then feds everywhere involved, like in, and she makes this point that we'll cover a little bit more later, that when it comes to like the federal investigators, whistleblowers, and then the feds being involved in the event at the location is a substantial variable in asking the question, was there a larger conspiracy? Yeah. So I think this patterns to that. All the same people, you know, who are very much believers in the typical story for JFK also happened, just so I happen to believe also that Charlie Kirk was killed, and there's not any other questions around the killing.
There's also just a lot of other strange things that were happening around it too that are beyond just the shooting itself. But there's like all these donor issues going on at Turning Point. Mm-hmm. There's these text message chains that we've all seen and we've covered in the past with how he's feeling about his relationship with, say, like BB and stuff. There's a lot of him wanting to do internal audits at Turning Point. Yeah. There's a lot of kind of curiosities with the faith side of Turning Point and interesting military connections that exist within that. So like it's one of those things where you, when you just see everything in its whole, you're like, and then you have this guy who's this gigantic star and has the ear of leaders of nations and, you know, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. You look at it and you're just like, yeah, there's not only is the shooting feel weird, like you have this guy in the crowd, you know, being like, I did it. And then it's like, no, I didn't do it. You know, like, right. like all these things, all of these pieces, you look at it and you're just like, something is strange. Something feels off. There's something deep in my gut that feels like we don't have the full story. And there's a lot of people that don't want you to know the full story or seem surprisingly uncurious about uncovering a full story.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing, is the seeming incuriosity that exists on the other side of all of this wild imaginative investigating that's going on. There's something maybe built into people that just can't accept that this was just so simple. And maybe that's to a fault. Do you think that's to a fault? It could be that simple, but there's something human that says, I just don't know.
Yeah, there's an abuse of Occam's razor, right? Yes. Where Occam's razor is meant to say that the best way to articulate something
is the simplest.
Is yeah, exactly. Right. And the best way to and if you can understand something on its simplest terms, you have best understood it.
Right.
That doesn't mean conspiracies can't happen or complicated things can't happen, right?
Right, right. Life is very complicated.
People so often, it's like Occam's razor, the simplest thing is always the thing that happens. Right. Yeah, no, that's not how the world works. The world is very complicated and multivariable.
True.
It's often way more complicated than the simplest thing, especially when we're talking about nation states and politics and, you know, and geopolitics and all this stuff. Things get very messy, very fast, all the time, because there's so many different opposing interests in all of this stuff.
True. And I, you know what I think is another factor here is something that I think is a product of AI, where humans are developing and having to perhaps very quickly evolve a strong sense of things that seem even slightly fake, because we're confronted with them all the time. Mm. If something doesn't add up, more or less 99% to your sense of real, it triggers something. It happens to me. I mean, you guys have probably also noticed this on social media or wherever. My acuity for detecting AI video, even very, very slight flaws, is so high right now. Mm. And it comes down to like voice artifacts, mm-hmm. you know, audio anomalies that I know that's not a real human voice because it has a certain interesting filtering to it, or whatever it is. You know, at first it was the hands, right? The hands were always the tell.
Right.
And now it's becoming more subtle. AI is learning how to make hands right. Yeah. And so you have to look to other things. And I feel like there is an overflow effect from that, that right or wrong is causing people to search into the mystery, into the vagueness around issues, perhaps like this one, for anomalies that trigger them as not quite right.
Well, yeah. And like I said, there's such a pattern of abuse when it comes to these things that people just go there immediately. And some of them,
and there's reason to.
Yeah, and some of them came out with motives and suspects that were completely disconnected from any material evidence right off the bat. Like within hours, people were saying, "Ah, Israel did it." Right. Just on the theory too that quickly. Israel too killed quickly. JFK, which I actually think is the weakest theory for JFK's assassination. I think it is the weakest set of facts to support it. Mm-hmm. The strongest theory is the Cuban refugee or Cuban exile CIA connection. That's a much stronger theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, people are just kind of leaping there because of prior ideological commitments, and then because, well, they assassinate a lot of people, you know. So they're just like seeing a pattern. They want to be the first ones to say, "I saw the pattern first."
Right.
There's
a social clout aspect, yes, to discovering the thing that becomes, yes, the prevailing theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or also just because, like, that's the unfortunate. There's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of Israel, but like you go on Twitter and it's just Israel's everybody's personalities, and it's just kind of like
it's a little much.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Because the Israel theory, the only way I could see that being the case in their motive is if it was the idea of a hostile takeover of Turning Point USA. Like, mm-hmm, I could see the hostile takeover idea of it
if he was moving away, and that's, yeah, why the whole conversation about Charlie's position on Israel perhaps transforming over this period of time where he has to drop Israel is, you know, a real substantial part of it, because they ask the question of motive, an important question of motive for a potential actor that people are looking to. That doesn't mean it's been proven. It doesn't, but people are so sensitive to this from like the anti-Semitic point of view that they don't even want to be questioned, right? But it is a nation state with an intelligence service famous for assassinations. So you can't expect people not to go there. If indeed the paper trail does play out, and I do think that's the case is solid, that Charlie was having concerns about Israel and perhaps changing his point of view on his support of the Netanyahu government.
Yeah.
Based upon the fact that he might have been losing his own clout on that, right? With, you know, getting confronted by Reuters at every event that he goes to.
He's also losing money from donors left and right for having people for having Dave Smith, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, mm-hmm, et cetera, in relation to all these things. It's also the letter situation was very
weird.
Odd. It was very weird.
Yeah.
Because for people that didn't follow that, BB was like, Charlie sent me this letter, and all it was praising Israel, yada yada, and it was like the first thing, and he did two media interviews like right after and just be like big hero of Israel. It felt very propagandy, you, yes, know. But then when the letter was finally released, everybody was like focusing on the first paragraph, which was like, I've had such a great time going to Israel and, yeah, being shown around. But then a lot of the letter was like criticisms of their media strategy and like, yeah, you rely way too much on paid surrogates and like these things, you know, and it was said in a very polite way, but it was like pretty critical, mm-hmm, actually, if you read it. Mm-hmm. But everything around it was like, see, he said in this line, he loves Israel, you know, yeah, it's like, yeah, but there's more, yeah, to it than that.
Which, like, is, yes, then you have people like Josh Hammer saying like he never faltered on his support of
when
Israel.
He was in the text message group, yeah, where he talked about how, yeah, he was faltering. It was very it's very it feels icky, right, especially, and that's one of the things where, because Candace kind of let these things go on for like 2 weeks when she had the text messages, and that was one of those like big bombshell moments where it's like, well, here's the text messages,
yeah,
and but she just let all these people say the things for 2 weeks.
She let them dig their own grave, basically,
and that was a very wise and media savvy thing to do.
Yeah, you have to hold two things in your head at once, which is difficult for people to do. I have a hard time with it, just like everybody else. It could both be true that Israel had played no role in this assassination and that Charlie Kirk was moving away from Israel at the, yes, same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they had a role. Both can be true, right? Mm-hmm. And so if someone has to have it where it can't be true, that person is trying to manipulate you. If they're trying to shape your mind, psyop you into thinking, oh, well, there's just no possible way it could be that because they're the good guys, right? Well, who knows? You know, like a lot of things are capable of state actors. State actors are not the moral people, right? They're the people who live by extortion and murder, right? Mm-hmm. So state actors are the most dangerous people. And when you're dealing in the geopolitics of something like that, you have to keep open to that idea.
Right.
Israel's also like extremely multi-faction too. So oftentimes people put too much on Israel as a whole when there's like, which part, which faction within right. Israel.
Maybe the Ben-Gavir side was like, yeah. he's moving away. Got to, he's, Josh Hammer sent me the text messages. We got to do something. If we lose TPUSA, you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is if the investigation into, sorry, Joe.
No.
If the investigation into, what's his name? The main shooter,
Tyler Robinson.
If that never asks those questions and they never get asked, that's an important thing that never comes to the forefront of our minds. And then we don't know. Right. And that's an important set of information if it could be revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I just think there's, I just want to inject here that there is another thing that you need to kind of keep in mind as you examine all this stuff, living on the internet, waiting with bated breath for everything that Candace might drop on this or anybody might drop on this issue or any issue, is that these aren't the most important things in life, too. Mm. Right. To get too wrapped up in any internet narrative, any conspiracy is not healthy, right? There is a real world out there. And I don't want to necessarily use the cliche of touch grass, but really though, do.
Detox from Twitter sometimes.
Absolutely.
It'll help you see things clearly too, because you can't trust your For You page. That's for sure.
Yeah. Pet your dog, go on a walk, breathe fresh air, do real life things also in the context of your life. And I know that that might sound a little bit pedantic or something, but just actually make sure that you make time to do that, because this stuff does go too deep and it will rope you in and it is not healthy for you. And just enjoy the world actually 100%. As well.
Yeah, as we engage in corrupting your mind, please keep that in mind. We're having a new segment in the show. It's just Joe's Mental Health Corner, where we just stop and be like, just put the podcast down for a minute and just go for a walk. Then come back to us, look, okay, guys?
You could theoretically hold two things in your mind at once.
Listen to us during your walk.
That's exactly right, Bennett. Thank you for saying it.
All right, so we have she did a show today where... And I had done a lot of like trying to go through all of her work, as much of her work as I could in the time I had, to try to get, okay, here's the steel man of what she's been able to pull to the table so far. On today's show, she did it for me. So that was quite nice of her. Thank you, Candace. And these are her confirmed data points of the kind of holes she's poked or observations that go against the narrative or complicate the narrative to a substantial degree.
For those of you watching, I just want to apologize on Candace's behalf for this ocean of text, because it is the worst PowerPoint you've ever seen in your life.
So, Joe, do you want to read out the first bullet point there?
Sure. The surgeon never confirmed or suggested that Charlie was shot with a .30-06 or that Charlie had a steel neck. Rather, he suggested it may have been a frangible bullet. David, what is a frangible bullet?
Okay, so a frangible bullet is, you will find them, have you ever seen a bullet with like a little plastic tip to it? That is oftentimes a frangible bullet. What it basically means is that it's like a hollow point, like other kinds of bullets, that when it strikes, it mushrooms and then shatters if it hits something really hard. The theory being that the reason why there was no exit wound is it enters in, strikes the spinal column, and then mushrooms to shatters, maybe down, maybe up, and gets caught in the cranium. But it does, it takes a lot of the velocity out of the bullet once it hits something hard. That's the thing to understand.
Right. It's not necessarily exiting. It's expanding within the cavity to cause maximum damage. Mm-hmm. So a lot of hunting rounds and things.
Exactly. So the theory, that there's two really big parts here. One, the guy, Andrew Kolvat, who did the tweet on the Man of Steel thing.
Right. Steel neck.
Yeah, steel neck thing.
It was a miracle. It was that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That was PR, right, or something, right? It was not a true thing, according to the anonymous source that she is working with here. I watched the thing on this, and it is, as far as if I understood her right, a singular anonymous source. So keep that with a grain of salt. But with that accusation, it could be, one, we're not confirming it was a .30-06 from the bullet, right? If it shattered, difficult to confirm. We only know that from the gun.
Right.
So without a continuum of the gun to the bullet, difficult. Second, the doctor doesn't confirm that. So therefore, you have the question of like, was another bullet, was another, you know, caliber used, but from a different shooter? And then lastly, the whole like, in this, I'm agnostic on the could a .30-06 cause this wound. I hunt with a .30-06. I've shot deer with .30-06. And you really shouldn't, I mean, like, I don't trust Ian Carroll's take on this. Because it's not that I don't like Ian Carroll or anything like that, but rather the question of what a bullet does once it enters a body is always very difficult to predict. And modeled shooting just doesn't quite cover it. I've seen strange things. I've seen deer shot from the front where the bullet comes out the side. I've seen all kinds of weird stuff. I've seen stuff go in on what you would think would come out the other side and just not.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
With the caveat that the composition of a deer's vital area, rib cage and all, neck, mm-hmm. whatever, very different from human anatomy and composition.
Right. So and you
stronger,
can definitely
thicker.
That's what I'm saying. Both of the mainstream theories are possible, and they don't disprove themselves on face.
Right.
Which you got to be careful about. And I don't even think Ian Carroll or Candace are saying that. They're just saying, like, it's a thing to question.
Sure.
Because it isn't the solidest, like, very clear, oh, we got the bullet and it went exactly in this pattern mm-hmm. that we have, because we don't have the autopsy. We don't, and all we have is the statement of this PR person who obviously lied and said that it was confirmed it was a 30-06 and confirmed that it struck the bullet, the neck, and he's got a steel neck.
Yeah, because right. it was coming into the narrative of it was a miracle because the bullet didn't hit anybody else.
Which is part of the emotional PR part of it, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and Andrew, just to maybe give some credit to Andrew too, he is kind of one of the main guys on Charlie's podcast, but also he's been one of the guys kind of leaking a lot of these text messages behind the scenes. So it's kind of interesting.
Hmm.
So, but he is the PR guy for TPUSA.
Right. So yeah. it's his job to control the narrative and to the benefit of TPUSA. Yeah,
but then behind the scenes, he's like showing screenshots of text messages from Charlie and text message groups and stuff like that. It's just kind of interesting that there almost seems like there's like two faces that he's holding.
Well, I mean, again, I think that's controlling the narrative. If something comes out, someone makes a claim that casts them in a bad light, they have to corroborate something. He's got to play that game both ways, mm-hmm. potentially.
Yeah. Well, because like the text message that Candace received was from Andrew,
right?
For mm-hmm. that kind of helped with a lot of the stuff. So,
yeah. Point number two.
Yeah.
The lone confirmed eyewitness to the alleged shooter on Lossie Center rooftop before the sound of a shot rang out has not been contacted by lawyers or investigators on either side of the trial. So this is talking about the person that seemed to see someone standing on the top of the highest point in this campus area around the event that was going on, seemingly has not been contacted by anyone associated with the investigation or the trials that are going on.
Mm-hmm. And that person reached out to Candace. That's what the current...
I don't know.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But it seems to be, yeah.
Double check us on that.
Yeah. Crucially, this individual is an instructor at a gun range. He claims the weapon he saw looked more like a .223, something shorter than the one they found. So that would be like an AR type platform. The person he observed was wearing what seemed to be black tactical gear and looked like, quote, like a professional, end quote.
That's substantially, because that what that posits is a alternative shooter theory.
Yes.
Right. And from someone who should be qualified to be able to say that. It is a singular witness, though.
I believe, if I remember from the reporting, this guy that was the trained gun range instructor, I believe he's the guy that took one of the kind of famous videos of...
That's what I remember. Yeah. Also, I do think that's accurate.
It's like the same person.
Oh, interesting.
That was one of the clear, like, he's on the roof, that thing.
Right. Video. Yeah. Mm. Number three, bomb dogs were unable to locate the weapon in the field that it was discovered. Bomb dogs were unable to locate the weapon in the field where it was discovered.
Yeah. So, and this makes more sense when you read the next one down too.
Yeah. Federal agents directed local officers to the weapon.
Okay. So the story there is that officers searched the area, the wooded area. They
with
say
dogs.
Like, no. First on their own.
Okay.
Then with dogs. And then the FBI shows up and sends two guys who were new on the force into that area who then find the weapon.
Right. They're like, hey, go look over there. And that's over there is where they found the gun.
And she says she has multiple police officers who confirm that story.
Okay.
So that's important, because if you were to plant the weapon there, that's how you would do it.
Right.
Right. And that would be... I do have one criticism of her though, that I do think is important. There is a difference between a bomb-sniffing dog and a firearm dog. Right. So bomb sniffing dogs are trained on a different scent pattern than firearm dogs. Now, bomb sniffing dogs can find firearms and will be kind of get confused and get triggered by them. But it's not the same sort of thing. So you can't really use it as the kind of kill shot I think she's using it as, because she says bomb sniffing dogs and she hasn't confirmed that they are indeed firearm dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Kill shot might not have been the best phrasing. But
oh,
we're going to move on from that.
Yeah. My bad. Yeah.
That's all right. Canines.
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
Thank you. I was hoping I could telepathically communicate to Bennett and play that.
Sorry.
That's all right. Canines were not provided with the scent of the weapon once it was discovered in order to track down who left it.
Yeah, so there was this dog that they used to try to backtrace where they thought he was based upon finding the weapon. That wasn't done.
The canine was never allowed to smell the gun and then say, okay, go find the trail of where this gun went to hopefully find the person who was carrying it and shot it.
Yes, to find the shooting position or at least the general direction of it.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Terrell Farnsworth raced to remove the camera that was directly behind Charlie's head. Is this the guy we've seen on all these videos that steps up after the melee is kind of starting to calm down and removes the camera apparatus from the back of the tent?
He was a Turning Point employee, I think.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, he takes the SD cards.
Mm-hmm. Which still, I'm not sure is well accounted for, or if that's just a rabbit trail that's not worth going down.
She's contacted him and had conversations with him, I know.
Yeah, as I understood, she said pretty early she had contact with him and had seen at least video of the footage from that
game. He gave her the footage, is my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that's accurate.
I wonder why we haven't seen that footage, but
that's... She's shown some of it, but blurred in certain areas and stuff like that. She has shown some of that.
Okay. Next one down. Federal agents prevented the surgeon from returning to his operating room.
Okay, so this is a story that she relayed out where she says that after they failed to be able to resuscitate Charlie, Erica is on the way. The surgeon wanted to go in to kind of clean up the body for the spouse to see it, and federal agents prevented him to. Then, and this is where that's not in our notes here, according to what I saw, her say was that then that surgeon called someone political, and then that person countermanded the FBI or the federal agents, and then then the surgeon goes in, cleans up the body.
Okay, so just to get this straight, make sure I'm following. Federal agents initially prevent the surgeon from going back in and cleaning up the body after the resuscitation efforts are unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. The surgeon calls someone political, quote unquote. That political person calls the agents and says, let him go do it. The surgeon then goes in and cleans up the body, which is not typically something that you would do if you were considering the body as the victim of a crime.
Yeah, I actually don't know the practice there. I would guess that's how it'd be because you would want it as clear of a state for forensic purposes as you can.
You would think.
It depends on how much the cleaning is, right? Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I have to assume it's just to get rid of some of the blood and stuff. Like, I don't think he's messing with the body. And I think more of the concern that she's laying out is that the federal agents prevented him from going back in, not that he went to clean the body. I think that's a pretty standard practice when you're about to have the family come in.
But in her original video that I watched and was summarizing from, she kind of made it both. Like, that it was weird that this dynamic happened, right? Mm-hmm. Where this guy calls somebody who then countermands the feds. Like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Who are you as a surgeon
does he know?
Yeah, exactly. And then it's strange that it would have that standoff that then results in that. If they were preventing him from doing so for investigative purposes, perhaps there's a case to be made there. But then why did he need to get in there at that point?
Right.
If there was no foul play.
Right.
But I'm not saying that there was. It could have been just a total standard, like, move the thing up to the chin so you don't see the ghastly wound.
Right.
Yeah.
Next up, we have federal agents removed the hospital's surveillance footage.
Yeah, I don't know what that one's about. I haven't even all tracked that one. I don't really understand what it even means.
There were theories that were laid out a lot, like, early on about questioning which hospital he actually went to.
Yeah.
And there was... supposedly, I don't know where this theory ever went, so I'm just kind of reciting what I remember from like a month or two ago, that it was questionable. Like, it was always stated that he went to a certain hospital, but he actually went to a different hospital, and I think that might be going in with that theory. And there's a question of why did they lie about the hospital, if they lied. I'm not saying they did. I remember that theory being posited.
It's even just strange to remove the hospital footage. Like, why?
Yeah.
Right. It could be as simple as like the feds not wanting anyone to make money off of something that could compromise the investigation by, you know, if you're like a hospital employee, download it and you send it to TMZ. I don't know. I don't really know.
I mean, I could see it, I guess. Could it be useful to their investigation in some way? I'm not exactly sure why, because he would have already been incapacitated at that point, and unless they expected there to be something in some way useful or incriminating or something else on that footage, why would it be of value to them?
I don't know. Just information control, right? Yeah, I mean, and it's important to see the FBI as both a federal investigative like thing and an intelligence agency.
True.
Right? So like
we can't
information control is not is a part of their mission.
Yeah. I do think what Kyle was saying, that does ring a bell. Like, I think she, if I'm remembering correctly, and take this with a grain of salt.
It's been
a
while since
Yeah, like, I do feel like I'm remembering that she said people from the other hospital contacted her.
Yeah.
Saying that Charlie was actually there and not the one that it was reported.
Mm.
So I think just wanting hospital footage to confirm which hospital he actually went to is what she wants in this regard.
Yeah. Next up, the vehicle in which Charlie was transported to Timpanogos Hospital was not impounded by law enforcement. So they probably just, what, cleaned it up and put it on Facebook Marketplace? Or
actually, you're not that far off.
Are you serious?
Like, literally, the rental agency got rid of it really quickly.
What?
Like, cleaned it out and sold it.
Yeah. You're serious?
Yeah. No, I'm serious. Yeah. So they kind of, like, blockaded it off. There's, like, an interview with that fella who's part of the legal defense fund that's always suing the government on religious stuff. God, I forget his name. He was on with Megyn Kelly, and they were having Barnes? This conversation. I don't think that's right. But anyways, not important. A guy close to Charlie, he still had some stuff in the car. He was there for the whole thing. And he kind of describes
the
how...
pastor.
Not that guy. Not
the pastor?
I think so. Or I don't know. Anyways, it doesn't matter. There was this witness basically says, you know, like they held it for a while, decided it wasn't necessary for the investigation, let him get in, and then he found his bag and he found Charlie's like crucifix necklace. Lot of interesting questions around that, but the fact they didn't do a long-term impoundment, she actually has photos of the inside of the vehicle.
She does.
Yeah, and there's some strange artifacts in it, not really easily explainable.
Is there a lot of blood?
Yeah, apparently in the second seat, yeah.
And
yeah.
Yet they could still sell this thing?
Well, they clean it out, right? They like tear it out.
Carpet?
Yeah, it's a brand new car, right? So they just tear out all the interior and then replace it, I assume.
All right.
Yeah, but that's the explanation she gives you. Like, they tear it out and then they sell it right away.
Okay.
Right. Well, and that might be nothing other than just regular operating procedure, you know?
Sure.
Like, no one wants to think about that it could be the car.
You know,
like the rental employees who have to sell the car, right?
That's got
to
be
Can weird, you imagine right? buying that car and not knowing it's that car?
Oh, God, right?
Yeah.
That just seems kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Well, it's sort of like buying a house that had like a crazy murder in it or something.
Well, you have to disclose that.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have
it
to disclose.
It makes me think of that.
I don't think you have to.
I don't think you have to do that with cars.
Yeah, I'm going to.
That's crazy. You know,
it wasn't like shot in the car.
Well, no, but still.
I don't know.
It is where he died was in the car, though. My understanding from what this is what was told to me from a source at Turning Point. It was like an hour before it was confirmed he died, is that he was dead and they were preparing the statement at the time. But a lot of the reporting was always that he got made it to the hospital and was still making it. But my understanding is that he died in transit.
I'm surprised he made it to the car, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't have an ambulance nearby. I mean, but we don't need to go back into all that.
Yeah, to clarify, Grok says no, sellers of used cars are not required to disclose that if someone died in the vehicle, unlike real estate transactions. Yeah. There's no stigmatized.
I don't know if I like that personally, but you know, that's just me.
One regulation Joe supports.
Well,
I get it.
I'll think on it. You know, I'll think.
Report back.
Okay, so last 2 points here. There were multiple sets of prints on the weapon that was found. That's pretty interesting.
Very interesting. I don't know that one.
I'm not aware.
And we don't know whose prints they were. I assume one of them was probably Tyler Robinson's if he was the one handling it.
That's the thing. I wasn't able to confirm that one. I don't know where the sourcing is. Yeah.
So another question, why wouldn't he wear gloves? That seems like kind of just a casual like cat burglar thing to just pick up.
Or wipe down his weapon with the towel he's currently carrying.
There was a theory at one point. I don't know how strong this theory is anymore. I remember there being a theory that Tyler was more the... like the gun runner, like he got the gun in place, and that's where you get into like if he was a trained professional that shot it was like there's like a handoff that happened at,
there
was a theory about that for some point, so that might be a multiple fingerprint thing, but I don't know.
Sure. Well, but if there was a trained professional shooting it, they would definitely be wearing gloves.
You would think.
Yeah.
Okay, and lastly, the footage of Tyler Robinson turning himself in is apparently missing.
This one's the weirdest to me.
Yeah, you think the sheriff's department? Did he go to the sheriff's house or the sheriff's department to turn himself in?
Well,
Or at least even being walked in the perp walk.
It was a friend of his family.
Yeah.
And I think that happened at their house before.
But at some point, he has to walk into a police station to be like booked and charged and all the stuff.
And so then they call the police station, say, can we have the footage? Police station says the footage is missing.
Yeah.
I think that's what it
goes. Yeah. I think there was a local news in Utah that was requesting it, and it's gone.
It's glad it was missing. Yeah. So those aren't proof that Israel did it. They're proof that this is a complicated story that has lots of extenuating circumstances around it that we need, that we should be able to ask questions about and understand. And people who are like anxious for a unified theory, you got to be patient. That's the reality of it.
I think there's a lot of people that would want to do this. I think there's a lot of people that would have the motive, and it could be multifaceted. There could be a lot of different people involved.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say on the other side of that too, for the people that want to just believe the mainstream narrative and have the conspiracy theorists go away and quit making this an issue or sniffing around and hoping they're going to find something or whatever, you have to let them do what they're going to do too. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it just because you believe the mainstream narrative doesn't mean that everybody has to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and there could be just, you know, there could be some strange other stuff on the online side of him having this, you know, tranny boyfriend, Lance, and even Lance's parents think that he was more involved, which is interesting in itself. Mm-hmm. And there could be like some weird online occultism type of stuff that's going on, because that's a thing that drives a lot of young people into doing a lot of crazy stuff too. Like there's online cults that kind of put people into these weird nihilistic crazed positions and stuff like that.
Well, we talked about that, and we saw that in the Minneapolis school shooting, mm-hmm. where the shooter went into chapel on the day of school.
There's like organized online cults that are like 20, 30, 40,000 strong of people that drive young people into doing stuff. Like, it could be that angle, and there could be intelligence involved in that angle too. You know,
I would
like,
be surprised if there weren't.
There's a lot of different angles that you could take with this, and also a lot of other shootings that have happened. Like,
but the challenge is, will the FBI look at those angles, or will they focus on securing the conviction of Tyler Robinson at all costs and keep the focus narrow so they can secure a win, a political win, a sense of justice, a set this thing to rest, or cover, in doing so, cover up something they or someone else did, mm-hmm. by keeping the focus narrow? And that is the challenge. Yeah. But it is a challenge that is, I mean, like, there's so many disincentives to the alternative theory, because it only opens up more challenges to secure prosecution and to actually get that.
Right.
But that's not Candace's incentive. Her incentive is find the real people who did it. So
on the surface level, her incentives could be a lot of things. We don't necessarily know. We can't see inside her mind, right?
I try to take my role today as like, I'm going to try to be as fair to her as possible.
I think that's
because it's like
fair.
So trendy right now to hate her, right?
Of course.
And so
of
like
course.
I just being a contrarian.
But no, and I think that's
we'd have to give you
fair.
A different hat. Call you Tim Pool.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're both bald, so
yeah.
There's that.
I don't know. It could be a lot of things, and it's obviously an evolving story. And hopefully, we've done a good job, I think, of distilling everything and exploring all the avenues. Maybe not all the rabbit trails. There's probably infinite numbers of them.
That's the hard thing with the story, is especially if you're following Candace's coverage of it. It's like, if you miss an episode, you're like behind and you have to catch up. Because if you're just like coming into what she's saying now and you missed a month, it's impossible to track it.
Yeah. You really need to go back to the beginning of this one.
It's impossible to track it all.
Yeah. And you probably shouldn't, as I said before.
Yeah, you probably should touch grass.
Honestly, I really think, and the reason why I wanted to cover it this week is because between the Washington Post article and this interview and then this new one where she kind of actually tries to distill some stuff, there isn't a coherent overview, right, where you're just laying out all the evidence in one place with a high standard of degree of like confirming of how and why you know each of these things. So hopefully we find ourselves there over the next coming months.
Yeah, for sure. Well, guys, that seems like a great place to wrap up. Thank you all for your time and dedication to this research. And thank you guys at home for watching and hanging out with us. If you have thoughts on this, leave them in the comments below. Don't forget to call us the opposite of gay and retarded, whatever you think that is. And join us in the Discord if you'd like to be a part of the conversation. Link is in the description. For David Rand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.